So cancel culture is a dress rehearsal for mass murder. Now, be very clear. Cancel culture is a dress rehearsal for mass murder. They're seeing if people can be disappeared from social media, and if people accept people being disappeared from social media, then they will accept people being disappeared from the world. When communists get into power, when socialists get into power, they kill us. No kidding, no fooling, and our families are lucky to get away. Yeah, it's a great leap forward off a cliff. Cancel culture is a dress rehearsal for extermination. Yeah, listen, they call it character assassination. Because it's a rehearsal, right? It's a rehearsal. And the kind of lies that are told about me in the mainstream media, in Wikipedia and other places, are very specifically designed to get crazy people to target me in a violent manner. It's an incitement to violence, right? Because they portray me as such an evil person that's the old, would you shoot Hitler if you, as a baby, or whatever it is, right? So yes, it is a sociopathic dress rehearsal for extermination. And it's very, very serious stuff because we want to push back while it's still in the form of language rather than wait until it's guys kicking in your door at 3 o'clock in the morning and everybody vanishing. So yeah, cancel culture is, well, first of all, it's the opposite of culture. See, culture is when you disagree. Otherwise, it's a cult. It's just the first syllable, cult, not culture, right? So culture is when we disagree and we're allowed to disagree because that's what culture is. It's just conformity, otherwise it's just like ants in a row. It's nothing, right? So when you silence people you disagree with, that's the opposite of culture. That's stagnation, that's decay, and there's a murderousness to it. There's a murderousness to it.
But they're changing the definition of the words. They're changing the definition of fascism. The fascism is to violently push someone back from not agreeing with them, but now they're changing it to be labeled to people that pro-free speech.
Yeah, of course, yeah, of course. So what they do is they will charge up words with such negative connotations that when they then attach those words to people, it's like that laser painting for an airstrike. Right, so that's they want to charge up like words like racism, white nationalist, white supremacist, fascist, Nazi. They charge these words, and listen, some of these words have negative connotations for good reason and all that, but they charge these words up to the point where it overwhelms the mob's capacity for reason, and it creates such a level of hatred against those words that then when they attach those words to people, it's designed to call in violence, which is what I've sort of been facing, right? I mean, I can't. It's why it's nice to come out here with you lovely people because, you know, I go out to other places and, you know, people are attacking the venues. There are bomb threats, death threats. They call 911. The police don't even show. I mean, this state of nature out there for freethinkers at the moment. So this is a nice break from the studio.
What do you do with them changing the definition of racism? I mean, I'm reading now things like in colleges that African-American students can't even comprehend that being biased towards Caucasians. Race.
Well, see, now race is very clearly defined when it's time for affirmative action. But when whites say, well, we're a race and we have race interest, well, who knows what being white is? It's like, I don't remember that confusion when the term white privilege was. Nobody said, well, you can't talk about white privilege because white is so undefined. It's like, no, white privilege, right? But when whites say, well, you know, we're our race and we may have particular considerations, particularly when, you know, there's lots of negative views of whites being pumped out there through the academia and so on. Suddenly white is this amorphous thing that you can't possibly define. You can see Jared Taylor gets hit with these kinds of things as well, right? I mean, as far as just you have to stand up and speak the truth, you know? I mean, the alternative to standing up is disaster beyond what we can imagine. And understand, too, that the word racism, it's largely invented and deployed by communists in order to sow divisions between the races, right? So we have people of different races here. We're going to have a pleasant and rational conversation, and I don't care about your race, and you shouldn't care about mine. It doesn't matter, right? But if people can come in and say, ah, well, you see, you have to hate me because of privilege, and I have to hate you because of this, and we have something, we don't have this in common, and we don't have that in common. If they can sow these kinds of divisions, they can create civil war, and they can say, hey, man, capitalism failed. You know, which is like, you know, it's like poisoning your wife and saying, well, I guess she just didn't work out now, did she? A couple of more crunches, she'd have been fine, right? So it's, you know, a multiracial society to me, you know, is fine. But if a multiracial society is then has sows of hostility and hatred and division sown in, then we're doomed. We're doomed. And it's, you know, that's why I push back against this term. There are racists out there for sure, but it should be very sparingly applied. You know, this spray of everyone with racism, it devalues the word, which is an important word, because there are some people out there who are racist.
I'm David Schein. In Blacksburg, Virginia, I'm an independent medical researcher. I have a background. I have a PhD in math from MIT, and I worked at National Institutes of Health for 20 years, and also served as a consultant. On May 8th of 2020, the government of Peru authorized mass treatment of COVID-19 with ivermectin, a Nobel Prize-winning drug that has been distributed in 3.7 billion doses around the world, a very safe drug. Over the course of several months, deaths from COVID-19 dropped 11-fold with the use of ivermectin. Just to give you an update, in November, there was a new president who stopped using ivermectin, and deaths went back up 12-fold after that. So, but what's really interesting is we looked at the state-by-state data. Peru, every death had a detailed record. The data analyst, who's a co-author, Juan, went into this national database, and we looked at the data state-by-state, and the results are stunning and conclusive. Well, we started the analysis by picking 8 states. They're large states, they span different geographic regions. And we found, 24 states were given ivermectin early, as soon as their first waves of the pandemic began, they were given ivermectin and deaths dropped sharply, as shown by the blue states. But for Lima, there were political pressures and distribution of ivermectin was delayed 3 months. So you see in the top two figures, there are two measures of deaths, that while Lima essentially stays flat, the deaths continue at a high rate. In the 8 states, deaths dropped sharply. Now, figure 1D is really the most compelling, conclusive set of data in this analysis. These were states where the army went in en masse and distributed ivermectin in a very short period of time. We know exactly when they went into the state, so we can look in close time conjunction, and we see that within 11 days after the start of Operation MOT in each state, you reach the peak of deaths and then the deaths drop sharply. And this over 30 days, the average rate of decrease of deaths was 74%. The analyst, Juan Chamey, this was one of the brilliant techniques that he used. He actually got hold, everyone with a cell phone, Google is tracking wherever, Big Brother is watching you. But it's helpful in a way because it allows tracking to the local level of social mobility. And there's several indices. Did you go shopping? Did you go to work? Well, we actually tracked 6 measures of Google mobility. And we found that when the deaths were going down state by state, mobility was actually going up. So there was theoretically, there was a lockdown, but it was not being observed. So we ruled out things like social mobility, was population denser in one place than the other? No, different same densities, very different results, whether they used ivermectin or not. And actually, again, figure 1D, when the Army went in state by state at different times and shortly after, deaths dropped dramatically. This really defies any other explanation, but you'll see the paper's quite detailed. Pretty much any objection that someone put forward, we looked at the data and showed it didn't apply. Well, pretty much the lowest dose, the standard dose, is 200 micrograms per kilogram. So to be most precise, your dose would be calibrated by your weight. This is a minimal dose. The best results in clinical trials are being obtained with perhaps something like double that dose for 4 or 5 days in a row. And the thing about ivermectin, again, as I said before, it's been used in 3.7 billion total doses. And there are several studies where it's given at much higher than the standard dose, up to 10 times. And there are just no kinds of side effects of notes, forgetting serious side effects, even any side effects. It's one of the most innocuous drugs used in modern medicine, one of the most successful. It received the Nobel Prize, as I mentioned, and the group around the Nobel Prize winner was, for the first couple of months, as results came out, they were reserving their judgment. But as they've seen the results, they've been quite encouraging and quite enthusiastic about what's coming out. The way they got people to take it is it just so happened that the cases of some celebrities in Peru, some politicians and other well-known figures had serious cases of COVID. They took ivermectin, they got dramatically better, which is sort of, if you talk to people who've used it or look at clinical studies, that's what happens. But anyway, these were widely publicized. So because people knew in the popular press and social media that ivermectin was working, they very much wanted to take it. So that very much improved compliance. But it's interesting that I mentioned Operation MOT. It's described in the paper, but this was a campaign where the Army plus local health officials sort of treated COVID with saturation with ivermectin. They really went around and rounded up everyone who might have it. And so this was the most, in those 9 states, this was the most intensive treatment. And when you do a statistical analysis, you look at the extent, the rapidity of decline of deaths in those 9 states versus the rest, and you get a statistical, the so-called p-value is like 10 times better than what you need to conclusively say that something's working. So those were the states where ivermectin was most sort of extensively distributed and quickly distributed. And those are the states that had even better results than the others. The likely mechanism is just like vaccines. Vaccines generate antibodies. Antibodies go and bind to the spike protein of the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and that sort of prevents them from binding to cells, infectious cells, whatever. Ivermectin, there's several molecular modeling studies that indicate exactly the same thing. Ivermectin binds to certain regions of the virus that blocks them from both infectivity and morbidity. there's every indication that ivermectin will work with exactly the same efficacy against any known or emerging mutants, because it doesn't work by attaching to a specific epitope. It's more generic in how it gets in there, and it may be steric interference, but basically, no, it doesn't need to bind to any specific protein sequence, so it will probably work against all viral variants. It reached it in November, end of July and end of November, deaths had dropped 11-fold, excess deaths. It was practically back to baseline. Then a new president came in, and there are forces of profit. I don't want to get too much into this, but there clearly are forces that do not want a cheap drug that costs maybe a penny a dose, totally safe, basically like aspirin, that just so happens in many clinical trials to be reducing mortality by 90%. And there are political forces that do not like that. So the new president came in and pretty much ended IVM treatments in Peru. And from November 30th to January 31st, as we tracked, deaths then went back up 12-fold. Times 12. We hope that with this analysis things are going to reverse, and popular science, good science, and popular demand for healing COVID will prevail over these political forces. We hope that will be the case. Oh, exactly the same. I mean, what we see is an entire national population. We're replicating the same reductions in mortality that we see in the clinical studies. And I want to point out, Peru is a nation of 33 million people. It has a huge expanse in its area. If you overlaid it on Europe, it would cover from Denmark to Italy and Greece. If you overlaid it in the United States, it would go from north to south, Florida to Minnesota and New York. It's a huge country. There are 25 different states, jungle, coastal, mountainous. You have a real world experiment that sort of is in line with the clinical trials, but takes them a step further on a real world national population. The implications would be tomorrow, everyone who has symptoms in any country should be treated with ivermectin, and they should be tracked. And what happened in Peru is in 30 days, death dropped by 75%, by fourfold. They should track them, and they'll see that it's replicated. Certainly track. If they do it and for some reason it's not replicated, we'll say, geez, something very strange has happened. But ivermectin, it's widely available, it's inexpensive, it's as safe as any drug could be. There is no downside. There's a 95 to 99% chance that any country that does this is going to replicate the results, both of Peru and of the clinical trials conducted to date. Ivermectin is a important treatment to use interim to and complementary to vaccinations. There'll be months before everyone's vaccinated. In the meantime, everyone who comes down with COVID, their mortality could be substantially reduced. And there's some people who will not take the vaccine, and this can cover them. And also, there are certainly serious issues about whether the vaccines will cover emerging mutants, whereas ivermectin will almost definitely cover all the mutants. So in summary, ivermectin is a good treatment to use interim to and complementary to immunizations.
Bill Gates loves the environment. That's why he's been plastered across virtually every mainstream media platform over the last week to tell you just how important the environment really is. His new book, How to Avoid a Climate Disaster, has received an endless supply of lavish praise from legacy media outlets. Gates has been anointed the world's new climate czar. Bill is here to save the planet. He cares so much about saving the planet, he's demanding you completely change your lifestyle and behavior to reduce carbon emissions to zero.
We need to transform the way we do almost everything.
Someone who won't be changing his lifestyle and behavior to reduce carbon emissions is, well, Bill Gates. But don't worry, it's okay when Bill does it. Bill says you need to give up your gas guzzler to fight climate change. Despite the fact that the average electric car costs upward of $50,000, a price which most people can't afford, but Bill's commitment to reducing CO2 vehicle emissions is so steadfast, he owns a collection of Porsches, including a Porsche 911 Turbo. Bill is so CO2 emissions conscious, he had a Porsche 959 imported into America from Europe. He also owns a BMW 7 Series, a Mercedes S-Class, and a Mercedes 500 SL sports car. But you're bad for still using petrol. It's okay when Bill does it. Bill says you need to stop taking international holidays because airline travel just emits so much CO2. And Bill's leading by example. By continuing to fly on his Bombardier Global Express private jet that consumes 486 gallons of fuel every hour. It's okay when Bill does it. A 2019 academic study found that Gates was one of the world's top carbon contributors. Out of the 10 celebrities investigated for CO2 emissions over their private jet use, Bill Gates came in at number one. That's not surprising given that Gates owns no fewer than 4 private jets and a fleet of helicopters. Bill loves his private jet so much he flew in on it to attend the Paris 2015 Climate Change Summit. But those holidays need to go bye-bye for you. It's okay when Bill does it. Because you see, Bill powers his private jets with biofuel, which is totally environmentally friendly. Although, actually, biofuel causes massive deforestation, which in turn releases billions of tons of CO2 emissions. But it's okay when Bill does it. Gates also recently fronted a $4.7 billion bid for Signature Aviation, a leading provider of flight support for private jets. It's okay when Bill does it. Bill says you need to buy an expensive heat pump to warm your home because your existing system is destroying the planet. Bill's commitment to frugal living is so genuine, he lives in a 66,000 square foot mansion worth $127 million. It took 100 electricians to complete the project, which was built using 500,000 board feet of 500 year old Douglas fir trees. Sounds so environmental. Friendly. Bill's carbon spewing compound also boasts a 60-foot heated swimming pool. Every single year, large quantities of sand are imported from the Caribbean to be spread along Gates's lakefront shore. Sounds so environmentally friendly. Perhaps it's time you lived in an environmentally friendly sewer pipe or an eco pod. After all, we each need to do our bit to save the planet. Not Bill, though. His mansion gets through enough energy use to power a small country. It's okay when Bill does it. Bill's love for the planet also has absolutely nothing to do with his $2 billion worth of investment into new climate technologies. And his entire book isn't just one giant pitch to pressure governments into subsidizing the very kind of companies into which he's invested. Gates' 2019 tax filing shows millions of dollars in direct investments in companies like Exxon, Chevron, and Japan Petroleum Exploration, and billions more in fossil fuel dependent industries like airlines, heavy machinery, and automobiles. But that doesn't matter. It's okay when Bill does it. Bill says you need to switch to eating 100% synthetic beef because cow farts cause global warming.
I do think all rich countries should move to 100% synthetic beef.
And Bill tells you this while he's literally eating a beef burger.
He took us to his favorite burger joint in Seattle to explain.
The meat and the burger is a big deal.
It's okay when Bill does it. Cattle farming is bad for the planet. So owning farmland is also bad for the planet, right? Not if you're Bill Gates, because he's been buying it up in vast quantities. In fact, Bill's such a fan of farmland, owning a whopping 242,000 acres, He's now the biggest owner of farmland in America. That's a combined area of farmland bigger than the countries of Bahrain, Singapore, or Barbados. It's okay when Bill does it. Gates's farmland includes large tracts of corn and soybeans, which typically go to feed animals, often on factory farms, a particularly carbon-intensive model of agriculture. But you're bad for owning a few cows. It's okay when Bill does it. You've got to eat the 3D-printed plastic meat to save the planet because Bill told you to. Or maybe if that's not to your taste, you can just eat bugs or worms instead. A wonderful source of cheap protein. But don't worry, because Bill and his Davos mates will still be tucking into the finest organic grass-fed fillet steak. I mean, what better role model for global veganism than someone who describes himself as a voracious carnivore and lists his favourite food as hamburgers? What better person to listen to about food production than someone whose role in forcing GMO agriculture on poor African farmers increased extreme hunger by 30%. It's okay when Bill does it. Meanwhile, Bill says lockdowns should continue for years. Corporate giants have doubled their profits during the pandemic, while hundreds of thousands of smaller businesses have gone bankrupt. Lockdowns have plunged 1 billion people into poverty worldwide, while Gates has seen his personal wealth increase by $20 billion in the last year alone. Bill and his big business mates will continue to make obscene gains while he lobbies for economic policies that strangle the little guy into oblivion. It's okay when Bill does it. It's absolutely crucial for you to help me fight the war on free speech by supporting me via Subscribestar, link in description, and also signing up for my free newsletter at summit.news/newsletter. Gina Carano did nothing wrong. Carano was fired by Disney after the woke mob stirred up contrived outrage over her Instagram post. So what did she say? The now deleted Instagram story showed a picture of a Jewish woman being persecuted by Nazis and said, "Jews were beaten in the streets, not by Nazi soldiers, but by their neighbours, even by children. Because history is edited, most people today don't realise that to get to the point where Nazi soldiers could have rounded up thousands of Jews, the government first made their own neighbours hate them simply for being Jews. How is that any different from hating someone for their political views?" And this was the immediate reaction. The fact is, Carano is completely correct. Time and time again, history tells us that genocides and massacres are preceded by the dehumanization of the target population. The media is literally characterizing Trump supporters as domestic terrorists who should be killed by drone strikes. How is that not dehumanization? Prominent figures are calling for conservatives to be sent to re-education camps. How is that not dehumanization? Reza Aslan called for Trump supporters to be eradicated from society. How is that not dehumanization? Leftists routinely incite, support, and celebrate Trump supporters being beaten and murdered in the streets. How is that not dehumanization? The left calls Carano anti-Semitic for pointing out that Jews were dehumanized before they were slaughtered. Then they dehumanize and incite mass violence against people for their political beliefs, exactly as Carano said. It's okay when we do it. They're offended over her using a historical Nazi analogy, when the left routinely abuses the Nazi analogy all the time by calling conservatives Nazis in order to dehumanize them. It's okay when we do it. Disney-owned Lucasfilm has the nerve to call Carano's Instagram post abhorrent. I'll tell you what's abhorrent. Disney collaborating with the genocidal security services in Xinjiang while filming Mulan. That's abhorrent. Working with a regime that incarcerates entire populations in forced labor camps. That's abhorrent. Disney ignored congressional demands to know if it used slave labor in making Mulan. That's abhorrent. And you're mad at Carano over an Instagram post. Give me a break. You're calling Carano racist for making an accurate historical comparison, while saying nothing about Disney whitewashing John Boyega's Star Wars character out of their Chinese market poster to please the market. Didn't give a shit about that, did you? Disney fired Gina Carano for a social media post in which she told the truth, yet they rehired fired James Gunn after he made social media posts joking about rape and pedophilia. The mob isn't mad at Carano because they're genuinely offended over anti-Semitism. That's just the excuse they exploited to get her cancelled. They're mad at her because she's a celebrity who hasn't been bullied and intimidated into amplifying their demented, hysterical agenda. They're mad at her because she's a conservative. They're mad at her because she posted some memes on Twitter making fun of face masks. Oh, the absolute horror! They're mad at her because she called for a clean and fair election system. They're mad at her because she previously expressed support for President Trump. They're mad at her because she called out so-called anti-racist activists as cowards and bullies. They're mad at her because, wait for it, she didn't post anything online supportive of Black Lives Matter. Oh, the absolute horror! She didn't post the black square! They're mad at her because in a world of insipid conformity and ruthless ideological servility, she has the bravado to think for herself. The absolute horror! To the mob, Gina Carano represents the threat of a good example, and that's why she must be cancelled. As a warning to other celebrities who dare even think about challenging their cultural colonization. This is what happens when you defy our social hegemony. This is what happens when you dare stand up for those we have worked so hard to dehumanize. Remember, the same people who say cancel culture doesn't exist weaponize it at every available opportunity as a means of achieving their dystopian nightmare. A nightmare in which organized hordes of ideological jihadists wield the power to banish nonconformists to the fringes of society, having deplatformed, silenced, and destroyed their reputations. Their behavior mimics every top-down authoritarian tyranny in history. So Carano was completely right and morally justified to call it out. So sit down, haters, because Gina Carano did nothing wrong. It's absolutely crucial for you to help me fight the war on free speech by supporting me via Subscribestar, link in description, and also signing up for my free newsletter at summit.news/newsletter.